to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Wednesday, December 28, 2022. The South Sudan Army says armed groups attacked its bases in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area.
On the 26th December 2022, Gumruk and Lakwamala came and coordinated attack.
And South Sudan prepares to send 720 troops to the DRC on a peacekeeping mission.
You are
going as a national army, not tribal army or army of parties. You are a national army. You must work in the name of the flag of South Sudan.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan People's Defense Force says an armed group known as the White Army attacked some of its bases in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. The Deputy Chief Administrator for the Greater Pibor Administrative Area says the militia is in full control of Gumruk County. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kong says the White Army militia from Jonglei State has attacked South Sudan People's Defense Force bases in Gumruk and Lilkwangule in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. Kong says soldiers from the SSPDF's Agrip Independent Brigade in the area fought back before withdrawing from Gumruk.
On the 26th December 2022, Gumruk and Lakwangule towns came and coordinated attack from armed youth suspected to have come from Greater Jonglei. The force that was deployed in Gumruk resisted their advances for the whole of the afternoon, but in the early hours of December 27, they withdrew back to Pibor. And as of that day, the armed youth from Greater Jonglei effectively took control of Gumruk.
General Kong says SSPDF soldiers who withdrew from Gumruk are still battling in Kongor village in the Lilkwangule Payam. He says attacks on government held bases are, in his words, a clear act of rebellion that must be dealt with.
Of course, it is unacceptable for armed civilians to deliberately attack government health positions with barracks like the one that we heard in Gumruk. It was a declaration on the government, because if they are raiders, if they are looking for cattle, they are looking for livestock, do a military barrack have such a livestock? We do not have. When our base came and attacked, it was not having any livestock.
General Kong says the National Army is mandated to protect civilians and their property. He says if the militia does not withdraw from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, the SSPDF will continue to fight.
When they attacked Gumruk, our forces fought back in self-defense, but of course they were outnumbered, they were outgunned, and as a result they had to pull back. Okay. You know, the White Army came in thousands. I'm sure you had seen the statement I released. It was strongly worded, and if they do not stop attacking our positions, we'll continue engaging with them. We'll continue engaging them.
John Abula, the Deputy Chief Administrator of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says the security situation is worrying as the White Army controls Gumruk County. Abula says the area's residents have fled their homes.
Where there is fighting always, there will be no any civilian that can endure to stay in that terrible situation. They scattered to the bushes. They are not in town. So there will be no food. There is no food. There is no shelters. And there is no even medical services for them. So automatically it needs the humanitarian agencies and the government and the national government to come up with something that can rescue these people.
Deputy Chief Administrator Abula urges the national government in Juba to intervene in Pibor. He also urges his counterparts in Jonglei State to ask their youth to stop fighting and return to the estate. South Sudan in Focus contacted Information Minister Michael Makwey to comment on this story, but he did not answer his phone. Yesterday, Abraham Kelang, the information minister in the Greater Pibor administrative area, told this program that at least 56 people have been killed and 17 others injured in attacks. John Samuel Manyuon, the Jonglei State Information Minister, condemned the attacks and called on the armed youth to return to their homes immediately and said attacking Naivas is criminal and unacceptable. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The South Sudan government today graduated 720 troops who will be sent to the Democratic Republic of Congo on a peacekeeping mission. Addressing the troops at South Sudan's military headquarters outside Juba, President Salva Kiir called on them to maintain maximum discipline on their mission. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Hundreds of South Sudanese troops during a parade at Belfam, the country's military headquarters, outskirts of the capital Juba. The battalion of 720 soldiers graduated earlier today after completing a refresher course over the past few weeks. They are destined for deployment to the restive Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. The deployment is part of the East African Community's effort to fight rebels in the region and restore peace and stability. At the graduation ceremony, President Salva Kiir told the troops to maintain good discipline and obey the mandate of the peacekeeping mission.
I want you to keep a nizam.
I want you to go and keep order. Some soldiers who are being deployed to restore order sometimes would go and disorganize order. They will go and start misbehaving with girls and women. Don't do that. Don't take anything from anyone's shop or anything from the hands of a civilian. This is not the work you have gone for. Instead, help the civilians where there is trouble and protect the civilians and their property.
This is the first time South Sudan is contributing forces to the peacekeeping mission in the DRC. President Kiir directed the forces to remain united while serving in the DRC.
Another thing I want to tell you are going as a national army, not tribal army or army of parties. You are a national army. You must work in the name of the flag of South Sudan.
Angelina Teny, South Sudan's defense minister, says the deployment of the South Sudan People's Defense Force soldiers is a response to a request call from the East African Community, or EAC. In June, the EAC decided to deploy a regional force in eastern DRC. Kenya and Uganda already have sent troops. The regional force is expected to work with the DRC military and administrative forces. Teny describes the call for South Sudan to contribute troops to the mission as an opportunity.
We are very, very proud today because our flag of the Republic of South Sudan is going to be flying as a regional force to continue to contribute to stability and peace. And what I was saying there is that this is a great opportunity for us to actually change the image of this country.
Dozens of rebel groups operating in the eastern DRC and the M23 is one of the largest. Fighting between the M23 and the DRC army has escalated in recent months. At least 8,000 people have died in violence since 2017. The United Nations and Kivu Security Tracker, which monitors conflict and human rights violations, say 5.5 million people have been displaced, 700,000 just this past year. The Norwegian Refugee Council described the conflict as the world's most overlooked, under-addressed refugee crisis in 2021. The Africa Center for Strategic Studies, an arm of the U.S. Department of Defense, warned in a report this year that if the conflict in eastern DRC is left unchecked, it risks reigniting interstate conflict in the Great Lakes region. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
This year, Uganda became the second African country after Zimbabwe to approve the long-lasting injectable drug cabotegravir to prevent the transmission of HIV. Official data show about 1.4 million people are living with HIV in Uganda. For more insight, VOA's Lenore Modu spoke with Dr. Nelson Musoba, Executive Director of Uganda AIDS Commission, and asked him to elaborate on some of the country's priorities in the fight against HIV/AIDS.
As we speak now, the prevalence has reduced dramatically, including how HIV and AIDS presents. You know, back then it was, first of all, a diagnosis of HIV was like a death sentence. There was no treatment. In the early 2000s, a lot of our people started accessing antiretroviral therapy, especially courtesy of the American government through the Presidential Emergency Relief Fund for AIDS and PEPFAR. And of course, enrollment on ART changes the whole picture. People start living a near normal life. The symptoms disappear. That also goes with the disappearance of stigma. Because back before the advent of the antiretroviral therapy, because of the presentation of the disease, there was a lot of stigma. The situation is no longer the same. Although we have no cure, we have no vaccine, but with antiretroviral therapy, with other availability of prevention interventions, people are living a much better quality of life now. We have approximately 1.4 million people out of a population of about 42 million living with HIV now, about 5.5 HIV prevalence.
UNAIDS says that there are inequalities that are creating an impediment to the end of the epidemic, or at least to improving the picture overall. How does this translate in Uganda? Are you in your country seeing such inequalities?
One of the underlying driving factors is the inequitable distribution of wealth. And because of young people, especially the girl child, not accessing some of the basic things, menstrual hygiene materials, scholastic materials, they are forced into transactional sex. They are forced, to go into relationships where there is power imbalance with older men with whom it's not possible to bargain for protective sex. So yes, indeed, the inequalities still exist. They are part of what continues to drive new HIV infections. We are focusing on young people. I told you about the 54,000 new HIV infections in 2021 alone. 20,000 of those were amongst young people between 15 to 24, and two-thirds for every five infections, four of those were girls. So our priorities now are focusing on young people, focusing on the adolescent girls, young women and boys, but also, people who are at the margins, vulnerable populations, the commercial sex workers, the incarcerated populations, the men who have sex with men. That's the only way that we'll be able to meet the 2030 targets.
And speaking of intervention, Uganda approved the use of the injectable HIV preventable drug, cabotegravir. Tell us more about that. What does it look like in terms of deploying this strategy in the country for prevention? Is it also being considered for treatment?
For it to be protective. The injection, removes lots of barriers. It addresses the adherence challenges. It addresses the stigma and discrimination challenges. Sometimes people are in a relationship and they have not necessarily shared their HIV status with their partner. And the PrEP injectable, addresses that. So it's a welcome additional option. As a country, we just say yes, we shall add this to our options. We will go into looking at, we'll sit down with our partners, look at the resources available. But our approach has always been that every time there's a proven cost-effective intervention, we make sure that our population accesses it. The more the options, the easier the fight.
To what extent is Uganda winning the war against AIDS? Can we say that Uganda is winning the war, or is it very much a challenge still?
Uganda is winning the war. In 2016, The UN set up the 90-90-90 targets, where 90% of the people who have HIV test and know their status, and 90% of those who test positive are enrolled on treatment, and 90% of those who enroll take their medication. Uganda was one of the 8 countries globally that achieved the 90-90-90 by 2020. Following COVID, like most countries, you know, some of our gains were reversed. We saw new infections rising. The curve is not quite bending at the rate that we had expected it to bend. I've just mentioned new infections. We have complacency. We have, you know, we see infections amongst young people. But we are raising the vigilance.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at the so-called ghost workers in Somalia. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
Any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go in and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Somalia's president over the weekend said the majority of paid civil servants were neither in the country nor working. Hassan Sheikh Mohamud said 3,500 of 5,000 people on the government payroll appear to be so-called ghost workers. Ahmed Mohamed reports from Mogadishu.
President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud's assertion that the most government employees do not show up for the work was condemned by Somalis. While there have been similar claims in the past, the president's statement was met with outrage and calls for action. Mahat Mahmoud is fruit vendor in Mogadishu. He notes the government relies heavily on donor support to fund its budget, yet it pays people who do not report work. Mahmoud says the so-called ghost workers should be made to refund their salaries and prosecuted for corruption and abuse of public trust. Somalia's 2023 budget stands at about $960 million. More than two-thirds of it expected to come from donors. University graduate Deka Ilmi says the president and prime minister must swiftly deal with the issue of ghost workers. She says the government is paying more than 3,500 people who are not present at their offices, while students who completed their education are jobless. Ilmi says the president and prime minister should urgently do something about it. President Mahmoud talked about the so-called ghost workers while addressing officials during Friday prayers at the presidential mosque. Mahmoud said the government's biometric time and attendance system shows the number of staff that are present. Mahmoud says the machine does not lie but indicates whoever puts on their thumb on it. Civil servants are more than 5,000, he says. But only 1,500 are present. Somalia's Prime Minister Hamza Abdi Barre on Saturday confirmed the problem and ordered ministers to inspect and ensure that staff follow working hours. University of Somalia political scientist Mohamed Matan doubts that there are so many government workers not actually working. He says threats from Al-Shabaab militants who target public servants may also be keeping some away. Matan says fear of Al-Shabaab has forced everyone to trust only few and keep away from others. Although, he notes, civil servants cannot be fired and that has also led them not to be committed to work. And even if they go to the office, says Matan, they do not work. Transparency International has for the last 2 decades ranked Somalia one of the most corrupted countries in the world. Mahad Wasuge is the executive director of Somali Public Agenda, a research institution focusing on governance. He says ghost workers should be removed from public service, which should be reformed. Wasuge says that can be achieved with a broad government plan regarding the reform of the civil service, which is based on open, transparent recruitment. He says even director generals should be transparently recruited because they are not politicians but are there for administration and technical expertise. Somalia is hoping to secure debt relief from the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank by the end of 2023, but it requires strict adherence to fiscal procedures, including prudent management of public resources and streamlining Somalia's public service. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
As the year 2022 approaches an end, some residents in the Jonglei State Capital, Bor, are expressing their feelings, expectations, and aspirations for the new year. Some say the national government should do more to protect civilians, while others say they hope the unity government will speed up implementation of the peace agreement in order to prepare the country for elections in December 2024. Deng Gaideng collected these vox pops on the streets of Bor.
My expectation for the year 2023 is, we all know that a new year is uncertain. It could be worse or could be a better year. But I expect all of us to face the new year with ways on how we can stand, with ways on how we can be vigilant, more exposed, and yes, strong to face every uncertainty that may come.
What I'm expecting in the new year is to have a better life, happiness, clubs, increasing my business as a businesswoman. So, especially me, I was lacking shop in 2022, but I hope to have my own shop. This coming 2023. I'm also asking government to support ladies or anyone who is doing business.
2022 has been a very challenging year, and in the coming 2023, we are expecting that there is financial improvement, especially in our economic situation. We want to see that the South Sudanese pounds gains weight against the foreign currency, so that we are able to inject the little South Sudanese pounds that we gain from our hustles into starting new investment ventures or doing some sort of construction projects in our hometowns. We also want to see that there is sort of improvement in security situation, especially along major highways like the Nimule Road, where lots of people have lost lives. We also want to see that there's an end to most of the communal and ethnic violence that keeps on happening in most parts of the country.
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank God for having protected us from January 2022 up to today, the 26th of December. The year is almost ending, and we are only left with some 5 days to conclude the year. So generally on the 2022, so, you know, when every year is beginning, we hope that that year is going to be a year of happiness, a year of prosperity, a year of progress. So 2022 started very well, and I think, yeah, coming to the middle, there have been a lot of challenges, especially personal challenges. And I would not even conclude like saying that 2022 has not been a very good year. Of course, it has been a very good year at some parts, and it has also been a bad year at some parts. Coming to almost the conclusion of the year, we have seen some remarkable achievements that have taken place, that the government of South Sudan has made a remarkable improvement on the roads from Juba to Bor. And that is a very remarkable achievement. So Bors, since the creation, has not seen such a remarkable development, especially on the infrastructure. And coming to the city of Bors, you've seen how the mayor have at least restructured Bors as a town. You've seen the ways have been opened and a lot of things going on. And also I'm looking forward to seeing the prices of the commodities will subsidize so that the local community will at least be getting something for a day. So then, Guy, I'm expecting a lot of things to change in 2023.
I'm Achol Kurmaria from Bor. What I am expecting this year is that we need stability in Jongla Estate. The year 2022 was actually peaceful, but in the end now, starting from November, there is clashes between Nuer people, administrative area, and of course I wish next year the government will make a peaceful way for Greater Jonglei to be peaceful. Yeah, for the new year, I'm expecting to have a new job because I'm a graduate and I need job. Also, if I get my job, I'm also expecting to join my master's.
Hello. My expectation of next year, 2023, is I need the people of South Sudan to be in peace next year in 2023. I need peace to come to South Sudan. I need the full peace, not just a peace, the full peace whereby everyone will be walking on the road without any fear. That is what I mean by the full peace. Anyone who can go to the boroughs to go and make the shackle will just make his or her own shackle without any fear. That is the full peace that I mean. I need those who are in the cattle came that so that they will not be having any attack or any sickness. That is the feast that I mean. And also another expectation of me to have in 2023, I wanted to go on with my studies without any interruptions. Like we know that in 2019 there was COVID-19 and the school were not working, so I expect God to give us full protection so that something like what has happened in 2019 will not happen, so that we go on with our studies very well. And I wish everyone around the world to have peace. I wish everyone around the world a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year in 2023.
I expect to have peace in Jonglei State and nationwide, because we need to up road and a premium man, especially those who are constructing our road to Malakal. So we need to help peace so that they have free work. They will work freely without insecurity.
Those are the voices of some residents in the Jonglei State capital, Bors.
Oh yeah, I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease.
And that's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by Emmanuel Jal.
Civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. The world was a little bit better. Time to start.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal and that song, We Want Peace. I am your host, Nabil Biajo in Washington. Thanks for taking the time to be with